Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, the preservation, and the presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
So today's talk is on the Paticca-samuppada Sutta, the primary sutta on dependent origination. This is a sutta that I teach on every retreat and the beginning of any type of structured study, because this is what the Buddha awakened to. This is the identifiable problem that the Buddha discovered. You remember in the Nagara, those of you that are on retreat, we did the Nagara Sutta on retreat, but we've looked at that quite a few times, where the Buddha is describing the feedback loop of being stuck in self-referential views, reverberating around a consciousness that is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, not being able to see reality clearly. Everything then becomes a self-referential view. And so dependent origination describes, dependent origination describes the individual process that every human being is prone to and falls under, is ignorance of Four Noble Truths leads to suffering. And the Four Noble Truths describe the human experience of suffering rooted in ignorance of itself, meaning rooted in ignorance of what, when I'm saying itself, I'm referring to the three marks of existence where the Four Noble Truths reside within each individual human being and the environment that that plays out in, this impermanent environment. And because of a misunderstanding, stress and suffering arises. That's the three marks. Dependent origination is probably, it's easy to argue this point, but it's probably one of the most misunderstood, misapplied, and misquoted of all the Buddha Sutta, but it has to be when you listen to it. It really is a very straightforward teaching that isn't open to ambiguity, except to a mind that insists on creating something other than what the Buddha describes here. Because if you follow this, it teaches a completely different dharma, if you will, than everything else that's around today. And nothing addresses this problem. As soon as you hear something called the Bodhisattva path, which is what most of modern Buddhism is, I'm not putting it down, but it's a contradiction to what the Buddha taught, meaning a contradiction of developing understanding where there was ignorance. Excuse me. So the Bodhisattva vow is geared towards behavior alone without the understanding that is developed through the Dhamma. The Buddha's Dhamma addresses behavior, but through understanding. In other words, behavior changes naturally as a result of understanding what it means to be an authentic human being. And every human being is prone to what is included in this dependent origination sutta and in Four Noble Truths. We're subject to it, but we have a choice into how we're going to interact with it. Are we going to interact with this through developing wisdom, or are we going to continue to ignore our own ignorance? The Paticca-samuppada Sutta. The Buddha was at Savatthi, at Jiva's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. There he addressed those assembled. Excuse me. Friends, I will describe in detail dependent origination. Listen carefully. And what is dependent origination? Now, the Buddha is simply going to describe the process of dependent origination, the 12 links. And if you look at these links, you'll see references to the three marks of existence, to the sixth sense base, to this consciousness, this ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, and to the five clinging aggregates. You hear me say this often, but this is another complete Dhamma teaching when you understand the context, and especially when you understand it in light of what we're going to study on Tuesday, the analysis of the Four Noble Truths. And what is dependent origination? From ignorance as a requisite condition comes fabrication. It's the beginning of the entire teaching of the Buddha. From ignorance as a requisite condition, but it needs a bit of a qualification there. In context of the Buddha's Dhamma, we understand what he's talking about. From ignorance of Four Noble Truths come fabrications. What are fabrications? Fabrications are a corrupted view of ourselves in relation to the world based on ignorance. We simply don't have enough information about what constitutes a self and the world the self lives in to make something that's not fabricated. So once a mind is rooted in ignorance, it's prone to fabricating, meaning creating an ongoing series of corrupted self-referential views. And because of this process that the Buddha is going to describe, and I'm going to read, clings to those views. Why? Because they're self-created, because I made them. And I'm the God of my universe, just like everyone else is the God of their universe. And because I created it, I have to worship it. And that's just what we do. From ignorance of Four Noble Truths as a requisite condition comes these fabricated views. From those fabrications as a requisite condition comes consciousness. So again, now the Buddha's not teaching a creation myth at all. He's not teaching how a thinking brain comes into existence. Everything the Buddha's teaching here is accepted. It's a given. It's part of having a human life. As a consequence of having a human life, we're ignorant of Four Noble Truths. As a consequence of having a human life, and because of that ignorance, we fabricate views. And as a consequence of that fabrication, as a requisite condition, that fabricated view feeds our consciousness. It feeds our moment-by-moment thinking. So look at this clearly, this foundational aspect of the Buddha's Dhamma. My mind is rooted in ignorance of the way things truly are. Four Noble Truths. Excuse me. I'm gonna have to pay attention to this for a moment. See who this is. I don't recognize a name. Hello, Happy. Say hello, please. Happy, you can say hello.
Hi, it's Laura.
You always got these interesting names. How are you, Laura?
I'm well. Yeah, my Junie likes to, she does Zoom meetings with her teacher, so she always changes her name.
Happy June. Well, I'm glad you joined us. We're just starting the talk on dependent origination. Let me go back that just one. From fabrications as a requisite condition comes consciousness. So the human mind is now rooted in fabrications, corrupted views of reality, and that's what's feeding thinking. And there's no definable beginning to this in a physical sense, because it's not important. The beginning is ignorance. It doesn't matter where or when it occurs. It's occurring as a consequence of having a human life in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. So the given is ignorance. And because of ignorance, that mind is prone to fabrications, which feeds ongoing thinking rooted in that initial ignorance. From that type of consciousness, as a requisite condition, comes name and form. So that thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, prone to fabrications, now becomes a vehicle for self-referential views. Name and form, or the Pali word that's often used, or not the Pali word that's often used, the Pali words for this is nama-rupa. And it literally means name and form, which means we've given a name to a form. We've put a label on this form. And the label that I was given and adopted was John Haspel. That's my self-referential nama-rupa, self-referential view I have of myself. And it doesn't, just to make a point about fairness, because somebody brought this up, that basically, you mean we don't have any choice in this process. We really don't. As a consequence of, this is so important to the Buddha's Dhamma, as a consequence of human life, all human beings are prone to ignorance of Four Noble Truths simply because they're not taught that. And so people would argue, well, that's not fair. Life is not fair. That's probably the first thing that as Dhamma practitioners we should lose. If life was fair, little babies wouldn't live for two hours, and some people live 100 years. Right there tells us life isn't fair, and it can't be fair. It never will be fair, and it shouldn't be fair. If it was fair, the First Noble Truth wouldn't be a noble truth, would it be? Because everything would be fair. It's not. It can't be. Life is arbitrary. Life is chaotic, and life is impersonal. Another aspect of that chaotic nature of impermanence is uncertainty. We can never know what the next moment's going to bring, which means that a mind rooted in ignorance can never know what the next thought's going to bring. From nama rupa, from name and form as a requisite condition, comes the sixth sense base. And so now that I've started to identify myself with what's occurring, everything that comes in contact with my five physical senses and that sixth sense, ongoing consciousness, ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, is merely fodder to continue to ignore ignorance. A mind rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths is prone to ignore ignorance. It's part of the root of the word, isn't it? It's the nature of ignorance to ignore itself. And think about anything that you can apply personally to ignorance on that you were ignorant of, and it's just that, isn't it? It's not a lack of intelligence. It's not even a lack of opportunity. It's simply a statement of fact. Nobody taught me Four Noble Truths, so I had no way of learning it. When I did learn it, it changed everything. It changed the way I looked at myself and the world around me. That's what the Buddha wanted. And so I found out for myself, and all of you have found out, that this stuff really works. Because it works at the point of the problem. It works at the point of ignorance. It's everything the Buddha taught. We were talking about this beginning of, I lose track of the days, on Tuesday, in the meaning of becoming. Each moment holds a potential to either become further ignorant, as is described here, or to become awakened. And we do that, we incline our minds towards awakening by the Eightfold Path. We're going to get to that in the short beginning to this in 2 weeks. Let me continue. From the sixth sense base, and I should say from that interaction with the sixth sense base as a requisite condition, comes contact. It makes sense, doesn't it? As human beings, we come in contact with the world through our senses. From that contact, remember that contact is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. From contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. So now my interaction with the world, I should say, notice that this happens for all intents and purposes outside of time. This process of ignorance giving rise to stress and suffering happens so quickly that a human mind can't actually follow it from step by step. But if you look carefully from a well-concentrated mind, you can see this process taking place. You can actually see it. And so now we've come in contact with the world, with something that's occurring from a mind rooted in ignorance. And it does, my body does, and my mind does, what the sixth sense base is supposed to do. It reacts to it as a way of gaining information about what's occurring to me in relation to the world. But because my mind is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, I'm measuring unpacking this information from a mind rooted in ignorance. And now I'm making my feelings the declarative point of my life. And how many times have we heard and heard other people describe the quality of their life by how they're feeling? How are you feeling? Everybody asks that question. Everybody wants to tell everybody else how they're feeling. Well, a feeling is as impermanent as anything else. And if we start using feelings to describe the quality of my life, I'm lost, aren't I? Because that feeling is changing every moment. And I'm not in control of that feeling most of the time. What I am in control of is right mindfulness or right view, understanding what's occurring. From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. Once the verbiage here is important, excuse me. Using that word requisite. From feeling as a requisite condition, once feeling is initiated rooted in ignorance, as a requisite condition, I am required to feel something. I'm required, because of my mind rooted in ignorance, I'm required to react. I don't have a choice at that point. When you hear me refer to we have lost our minds, this is what I'm referring to. I'm not talking about someone who has literally lost their mind and is psychotically verifiable. That's not what I'm talking about. We've lost our minds when we don't know who we are in relation to the world we live in. And this is the subtle aspect that we're talking about. Because I don't understand what's occurring, and something comes in contact with me and it creates a reaction, and I literally lose my mind over that. I want myself in this moment and the circumstances creating this feeling to be different than they are. Excuse me. But that itself is a fabricated thought. Why is it a fabricated thought? Ron, why is that a fabricated thought? I don't like what I'm feeling. I want it to be different. Rob.
Why is it a fabricated thought?
Yep. All right, I put you on the spot. I'm sorry.
Because it's a reaction. I don't like what I'm feeling. I'm not at ease in the world. I'm not at ease in myself. That leads to fabrications.
Yes, and that thought that what's occurring right now is unacceptable to me is fabricated. Because it's not based in any type of reality. This moment can't be any different than it is. It's already occurred. Does everybody understand that? Because we like to take disappointment and think that we can use disappointment to create our futures. Could anything be more fabricated than that notion? That's what we do. Something has occurred that is disappointing in this moment, and that disappointment could be that I only got one piece of chocolate cake and not two. And because of that disappointment, and because I'm compelled to keep this fabricated self happy, I have to fabricate the next moment in time, which is how I'm going to get the whole chocolate cake. And again, I'm using a silly example, but that's what we do with every thought that occurs to us. Once we attach ourselves to it and it becomes ours, we need to have more of it. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's a chocolate cake, a Maserati, a new romantic interest, a better golf ball, or a better Twitter connection. It doesn't matter. We're always grasping after. That's what the Buddha teaches us. It's not grasping after, and it's not just grasping after Maseratis. Those are the obvious things. And it's not just grasping after the next romantic conquest. That's kind of obvious too. What is not so obvious but is most pernicious is grasping after the next thought that establishes me. Why? Because that thought is rooted in ignorance. And that thought that's rooted in ignorance gives rise to constant reaction. From that reaction, from that feeling comes craving. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining. Clinging and maintaining what? To objects, events, views, and ideas. But most importantly, and at its most subtle level, it's the thought of I am. Remember the Bahia Sutta. That's why I always go back to that so often. How the Buddha taught. Any aspect of eye making is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Any aspect of eye making must be, as Dhamma practitioners, be recognized and abandoned. But that's not that hard with an Eightfold Path. Because we can see it. Once we've developed just a measure of concentration and an understanding of the Eightfold Path. I was talking to Josh about this a little bit yesterday, too. Josh really gets this. The Eightfold Path is there to recognize eye-making. And we can see it in ourselves because we know when I'm acting in wrong speech, wrong action, or wrong livelihood, it's eye-making. Or when I'm seeing the world from what I just described, that I can change the past and so change the future, that's obviously a fabrication that we don't want to admit to. Many people spend, but if there is a way to quantify this, most people spend the greatest portion of their life thinking about what could be based on what was instead of what is, instead of living their life. This is why life is so disappointing, by the way. It's not disappointing only because things are fleeting and impermanent. It's disappointing because we're not here for it. And so, and I think every one of you has described this. As you become more well concentrated and more present because of the Eightfold Path, because of that developing right view, things that you didn't even notice about your life are now meaningful, aren't they? And they're meaningful for the sole purpose that we're here for it. That's where human life has its meaning and has its poignancy, is actually living it, not hoping to live it tomorrow, based on what happened yesterday, or not hoping to live it in the next moment based on what happened in the past moment. Because either way, I've lost my mind. From clinging and maintaining as a requisite condition comes becoming. Remember last week's talks on becoming. From clinging and maintaining as a requisite condition comes becoming what? Whatever I'm clinging to, clinging is maintaining. Whatever I'm clinging and maintaining in this moment, I have to become, don't I? Excuse me. And that's also a pure teaching on karma. Karma is a present moment unfolding of past intentional actions moderated by the present level of mindfulness, which means whatever I hold in mind is going to determine the experience and the value of this moment. And if what I'm holding in mind is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, then the only value this moment will have will be towards continuing ignorance. If in this moment I'm holding in mind the Eightfold Path and that developing right view, then the value of this moment is invaluable. My mind is now inclined towards awakening. And it is just as simple. And I don't mean to oversimplify it, but as we understand this process, that it is clinging and maintaining to wrong views, that I am becoming stuck in this, in the Groundhog Day loop of my own self-referential views. How do I get out of it? This is not me. This is not mine. This is not what I am, because I'm doing this process. I have to spend great effort to keep this process, keeping these requisite conditions going. It's like a juggler being able to, somebody that can keep all those balls in the air. That's what we're trying to do with all these different aspects of dependent origination for the sole reason of maintaining ignorance. Why? Because of ignorance. Simply because we don't know any better. It's what the Buddha awakened to. Remember his story. He wasn't looking for any grand magical or mystical answers. He wanted to understand the nature of suffering, of human suffering, and he figured it out. And this is his description. It's remarkable in how clear he sees this. From that becoming, as a requisite condition, comes birth. So we know the Buddha is not teaching any type of physical birth at all. His only concern is the recognition and abandonment of ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And so it's obvious then what he's talking about as far as birth. To anybody who's actually studied what the Buddha's teaching, he's not talking about physical births or future births. In this singularly important sutta, he's saying that becoming further ignorant is giving birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. And again, it's up to us whether that's going to occur or not. I'm going to go back just that one. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. From birth as a requisite condition comes aging, sickness, death, sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair. That's the Buddha's description of dukkha, of stress and suffering. Now, what is aging? Aging is decrepitude, the brokenness, the graying, the decline, the weakening of the faculties, and despair. Now, what is aging and death? I'm sorry. Aging is decrepitude, brokenness, graying, decline, weakening of the faculties. Death is the passing away of the five clinging aggregates, the ending of time, the interruption of the life faculties. It's such an important line. Now, this would be a perfect opportunity for the Buddha to start getting into future lives. What happens on death? Well, so-and-so, if you were this way and that way, and you might go to this place and that place. He didn't do it here, and he never did it anywhere in any of his teachings. The Buddha never, ever addressed any type of physical establishment past death, save to say you don't want it. Now, what is aging and death? Aging is decrepitude, brokenness, graying, decline, weakening of the faculties. Death is the passing away of the five clinging aggregates. That's the most important thing that the Buddha can teach. And why is that important? Some people would take that as relief or escape from the aggregates. What the Buddha's teaching is you only got one chance to do it. Once this is over, your opportunity to awaken is gone. Excuse me. The ending of time, the interruption of the life faculties. Now, what is birth? Birth is the descent, the coming forth, the coming to be. Birth is the appearance of the sixth sense base. Remember the progression in dependent origination. The sixth sense base is not something that was present first, because it doesn't relate to the description of ignorance giving rise to stress and suffering. The sixth sense base is present because of we're a human being. We have a human life. But as far as dependent origination and giving rise to stress and suffering, birth is the appearance of the sixth sense base. What that means is at coming to contact with the external world through a mind rooted in ignorance is giving birth to stress and suffering. Birth is the appearance of the sixth sense base. What is the Buddha's description of birth? Birth is the decline, the coming forth, the aging, the decrepit, all of that is part of birth. Birth is the appearance of the sixth sense base. So the solution is there too in that one line. If I can start feeding my own sixth sense base with wisdom, with knowledge, with understanding of who I am in relation to the world, then I will no longer give birth to ignorance. And it's just that way. And how do I do that? How do I get to that point where I'm feeding wisdom rather than ignorance? Through the Eightfold Path. Birth is the appearance of the sixth sense base and the five clinging aggregates. Now, what is becoming? Becoming is sensual becoming, form becoming, and formless becoming. We talked about this a little bit last week. Formless is simply the belief that I can establish myself in some non-physical realm. Form becoming, establish myself in the physical plane, the earth plane, and formless, any type of magical non-physical establishment is what the Buddha is cautioning against. And it really covers everything. What the Buddha is saying is, if you want to awaken, you do it in the earth plane, because that's what awakening is for. And that makes sense too, doesn't it? The Buddha was not concerned about or speculated about life anywhere else, in some other dimension or some other planet. Right here, right now, the Buddha taught a human Dhamma for human beings, period. He even talked about having other knowledge. Remember the Simsapa Sutta, a handful of leaves, where the Buddha talks about, I have vast knowledge of all things in the universe, but I only talk about one thing because it leads to the goal. It leads to awakening. And nowhere do you find the Buddha talking about things that didn't relate to the goal. Buddha continues. And what is clinging and maintaining? There are four types of clinging. Clinging to sensory stimulus, clinging to views. Once something comes through our senses, we create a view or conditioned thinking. Clinging to precepts and practices, which is something the Buddha continually said don't do, meaning any type of ritualistic Dharma practice, the Buddha said don't do it. Clinging to rituals and practices. And clinging to a doctrine of self. That's the ultimate, isn't it? Clinging to the belief that I am. Clinging to a doctrine of self. And what is craving? There are six classes of craving. Craving for forms, craving for sounds, craving for smells, craving for tastes, craving for physical sensations, and craving for ideas. You notice how the craving relates to each one of the senses? The Buddha teaches that each sense has its own type of consciousness. And that really is true, because there's times when your eyes are taking over your mindfulness and distracting you. Sometimes it's a smell, sometimes it's a taste, sometimes it's an idea. In fact, ultimately, it is an idea that keeps us distracted. And what is feeling? Feeling has six classes as well. Wait a minute, get out of there. Here it is. Feeling has six classes as well. Feeling arises from eye contact, from nose contact, from feeling contact. I'm sorry. From nose contact, from taste contact, from body contact, and from intellect contact. This is called feeling. So again, the same thing. Our feelings are arise from contact with our sixth sense base. So we determine how we feel. If in the moment I'm not feeling how I want to feel, you know, I should comment on that. Most people decide pretty early on what is an acceptable feeling, which is something that they would describe as happy or maybe pleasant, and everything else is unacceptable. And immediately we condition ourselves to only find a very small portion of life acceptable, that which is making me happy in this moment. And that changes over time too, doesn't it? The Buddha teaches us to understand that life is full of stress and suffering, to be at peace with it, which means that we can be at present with everything that happens in life. We don't have to exclude anything from human life as saying, this is unacceptable to me. Why? Because it's the most foolish thing anybody can do, to say that something is unacceptable. Why? Because it's already occurring. understanding is the answer, not the elimination of things that we find unacceptable. That can't be done. Again, the Buddha's description of dukkha, of stress and suffering, describes human life. That's what it describes. And the Buddha's saying, guess what? You all have a human life. This is how to make sense of it. And what is contact? Again, contact with the sixth sense base. I'll skip over that. Phenomena contact in the eye, ear, nose, etc. This is contact with the sixth sense base. And what is name and form? Name and form is feeling, perception, intention, attention, all mental aspects, and contact. Contact is discriminating self-referential. This contact is discriminating self-referential contact. Consciousness is name. So whatever there are is the makeup of our thinking is going to determine the name that I apply to this, or the lack of a name, the lack of self-identification. The elements of water, fire, earth, and wind, that which makes up physical forms is called form. Remember the Buddha's description of every human being in the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta. Every human being is made up of six properties and can be nothing more. The four elements, earth, wind, fire, and water, the fifth property called the space property, those elements need something to manifest within, correct? And the sixth property called the consciousness property. That's all a human being is or ever can be. Anything else is an embellishment or a convenience. That's it. The Buddha continues, name and form is discriminating consciousness bound or clinging to physical form. That's what it means. Name and form is self-referential views, clinging to physical form. And what is consciousness? So since the beginning of time, we've been trying to describe consciousness, usually in magical, mystical terms. Today, we're very comfortable with saying, well, consciousness is all one mind. Those that remember, that started with the mamas and the papas back in the 60s. Just kidding. The one thing that we should be clear about how consciousness works is the one thing that we are so quick to corrupt, calling our mind, my mind, part of one grand cosmic mind. And what does that do? It takes all responsibility away from my life. Now what's occurring within my mind is simply part of the cosmic consciousness. And I don't have to really do anything about it. In fact, I can't do anything about it. That was a common teaching during the Buddha's time too. And remember in the Gara Sutta and many others where the Buddha said, that's all nonsense. Each and every individual human being has an individual human brain and a human consciousness. It's not connected to anything else and never can be connected, no matter how much we want to create doctrines of interconnectedness. And it's usually on fabricating dependent origination that modern Buddhism comes up with names like interdependence, interconnectedness, and interbeing. But there's no connection between interdependence and dependence, is there? It's two completely different words with two completely different meanings. And there's nothing in dependent origination that would imply any connection. In fact, it teaches just the opposite, doesn't it? To recognize where we're clinging and let go of all of that clinging. There are six classes of consciousness, the eye, ear, nose, etc. And what are fabrications? This is so clear. There are three fabrications. There are bodily fabrications, verbal fabrications, and mental fabrications. That's all. What is the Buddha saying about that, fabrications? From intellect as a requisite condition comes fabrication. Well, we fabricate things that we hold in our body, and we fabricate about our body. We fabricate about our ideas and the ideas that we hold. These are all fabrications. And we fabricate things that, this is a little bit more subtle than the other ones. We fabricate words to manipulate others. So it's a fabrication on top of a fabrication. A simple word for that is a lie. But that's what we do. So there's no real confusion about fabrications, is it? Ultimately, what a fabrication is we're lying to ourselves. We're telling something to ourselves because we don't have the understanding of the truth. And so we are compelled to make up stories about ourselves. name and form, and we become self-referential selves because of that. The Buddha's saying here. And what is ignorance? Clearly defined, isn't it? What is ignorance? Ignorance is simply not knowing stress and not knowing the cause of stress. Ignorance is not knowing the origination of stress. Ignorance is not knowing the cessation of stress. Ignorance is not knowing the eightfold path leading to the cessation of stress. This is called ignorance. It's so clear and direct, isn't it? What is ignorance? Ignorance is not knowing stress. It's not knowing the first noble truth, not knowing the origination of stress, craving for and clinging to fabricated views, not knowing the cessation of stress, meaning not having the actual experience of the Eightfold Path. And ignorance is not knowing the Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of stress. Notice the words here too are important. The Buddha's not saying ignorance is not knowing the Eightfold Path. It is. But the totality of ignorance is not knowing that the Eightfold Path is the cessation of stress, meaning actually developing the Eightfold Path is the essence of ignorance. The Buddha concludes that by saying this is called ignorance. Now, from the Buddha continues, now from the remainderless fading and cessation of ignorance comes the cessation of fabrications. So if we want to stop creating a fabricated view of myself in the world, what do I have to do? End ignorance, but it's a very specific cessation of ignorance as the Buddha described here. Ending ignorance of the nature of stress, ignorance of the origination of that stress, having the direct experience of it, meaning and having a direct experience of impermanence and understanding it, and having a direct experience of developing the Eightfold Path. From the cessation of fabrications comes the cessation of consciousness. Now, of course, the Buddha is not saying that once we awaken, we no longer can think, although some people claim that. From the cessation of fabrications comes the cessation of consciousness, meaning the cessation of ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. That's what the Buddha is saying. And that is that's the most significant thing any human being could ever develop, because now you have the ability to live your life. From the cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form, or the continual establishment of self-referential views. From the cessation of name and form comes the cessation of the sixth sense base. I'm no longer using my senses to continue fabrications. Now they are a reaffirmation of reality, and that's all senses were ever meant to be, to be a reference point in time as life unfolds. From the cessation of the sixth sense base comes the cessation of contact. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of feeling, meaning reaction. From the cessation of feeling comes the cessation of craving. From the cessation of craving comes the cessation of clinging and maintaining. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining comes the cessation of becoming. So again, it's a little clue, right? In this moment, if I'm becoming further ignorance because I'm clinging to that. But if I follow this process, and can recognize at the point of contact, meaning practicing the Dhamma in my life as my life unfolds. This is what I'm always referring to, what the Buddha is referring to. At the point of contact, now I'm diminishing ignorance the way the Buddha is describing here. I'm involved in dependent origination, aren't I? Because in this moment, if I'm recognizing that this, what is occurring in this mind is creating craving for something, or clinging to something, I know it now. I can recognize the process. I can take a breath and let go of the thought. When I do that, I'm interrupting ignorance. And I'm interrupting the process called dependent origination. I'm undoing these links. And every time I do that, I'm diminishing the effects of my own ignorance until I get to the point where there's nothing left to unravel. And that's not an endless task, because remember, we're not dealing with a lifetime or lifetimes after lifetimes of events that we somehow have to unpack and figure out. That's not nothing to do with what the Buddha taught. That's not karma. All we have to do is have one thought, a pure thought that's applicable throughout the world. And the one thought is, this is not me. The moment we stop taking things personally, but most significantly our own thoughts, the whole chain of dependencies, the whole aspect, the whole process of dependent origination falls apart. From the cessation of becoming comes the cessation of birth. That's what that means. I'm no longer giving birth to I-making in this moment. From the cessation of birth comes the cessation of sickness, aging, death, sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair. Comes the cessation of dukkha. Wisdom brings a cessation to the entire mass of stress and suffering. Wisdom brings cessation to the entire mass of stress and suffering. What did the Buddha teach? What path did the Buddha teach? To teach wisdom, the Eightfold Path. That's the end of the sutta. I've heard from a few people that I'm reading too quickly, and I'm sorry that I do. I actually tried to read slower, but I don't think I did today, did I?
You didn't get a warning from Lorna.
I know, but I think she's just afraid because she says it so often. I try to do my best. That's all I can say. So sorry, Lorna.
I thought you were quite controlled today, John.
Oh, well, I take back what I said. I'm going to try reading a little faster now if I got away with it.
No.
Thank you so much. So this is and the next two suttas on the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. This is Dhamma practice. This is what we need to know. But it's what we need to know, because if we can understand this and weigh other things against this, meaning other practices we might be involved in or things we might be confused, is this Dhamma practice? Does it answer these questions? Does it direct our study towards the cessation that is described here? If it does, it's Dhamma practice. If it doesn't, it has nothing to do with the Buddha's Dhamma. And I only say that for clarity. This is such, to me, this is probably one of the most liberating suttas that the Buddha ever taught, because it simply describes a problem and it gets right to the root. I know what I need to do. If I really want to be a Dhamma practitioner and really take true refuge in the Buddha, his Dhamma, and the well-focused Sangha, I have to address the issue of ignorance. I have to be willing to do that, because that's the Buddha's Dhamma. But it becomes very, very simple then, doesn't it? Because that's all that I'm doing in this moment. In this moment as a Dhamma practitioner, I want to recognize and abandon any remnants of ignorance left within me. That's it. That's my Dhamma practice. So let's go around the room, and I'm going to start with Harry J. How are you, Laura?
Hello, everyone.
Good to hear you. Now it's good to see you.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty well. I love hearing about the dependent origination. I'm going to listen to this over again.
Good.
I feel like it really breaks things down, and I don't really have much to say. I think it's just a really grounding sutta that kind of reinvigorates the poignancy of the Eightfold Path, and kind of gives you a kind of this other framework to have observations of your of your day-to-day, moment-to-moment experience. That, not that you have to catch every little nuance, or that it necessarily follows, the order, because your consciousness isn't always getting every little click, but, it's really liberating. I think that dependent origination, understanding that, developing a real understanding of it, really is liberating. And I had a particular experience these past 2 weeks of feeling so stuck and being really, triggered by emotionally and taking things personally, even though I knew better than to take things personally, but it just was what was occurring. That's life. You don't know what's happening, and you might think you have an understanding of this, that, and the other thing, but then something even crazier happens. So, I think that's when you have this opportunity to, really look at where your Dhamma practice is. And this has just been perfect for me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for joining, Laura. Please tell Matt and the kids they said hello. David, how are you? Good morning, David.
Morning, John. One thing I try to do each day is remember what the goal of the practice is, the goal of developing, becoming dispassionate about the aggregates, because that's really, in the end, the ultimate goal. And yeah. I think sometimes we fly by that goal each day in the rush to get into the practice and to learn about these heady subjects and, you know, the Eightfold Path, but to remember what the goal is. And I think that's the hard part, because I think people fancy themselves as being passionate people, and they misunderstand what dispassion means. It's just to understand that it's the clinging and craving for. So I try to focus on that each time I sit, and each day I get up and go into the world. So thank you for this teaching.
Thank you for that, David. That was excellent. It was good exposition. David's right. You know, the Buddha describes the personal experience of suffering as five clinging aggregates, and that's what we do here. We're here to recognize and abandon these aggregates. Tim, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, everybody.
Good to see you.
I definitely can get on board with that. That is the goal. That's something that I do try to remind myself every day, or any time I feel any type of agitation arising. That passion, which is passion, where it's coming from. So, you know, dependent origination is, to me, like the center of the Dhamma, because all the other things that we discuss, that we parse out, come back to that. And, you know, it's always good to hear it, because it is the center. It is what the Buddha awakened to. So, you know, I just jotted down some thoughts, and I haven't refined them real quickly. You know, it seems that my goal has said this many times, that it stems from wrong view. You know, wrong view is where the chain of dependent origination is originated from, or initiated.
Right. Yep.
And I've said this in a couple classes, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, and that is that from that dukkha, that all the suffering, delusion, and despair is a result of the self, anatta, craving that which is impermanent, be permanent, which is anicca. And so those are where this, the three marks of existence filters into that dependent origination right there.
Yep.
The meat of it. And how do we change this? Through refining right view, which becoming disenchanted and becoming dispassionate from what David was saying, and to the reactions, so that the self, to the reactions, we don't have that reaction. And so when you asked Ram that question, I immediately said in my mind, well, all thoughts and feelings that are from wrong view are fabricated. It happened. It must be.
Yep.
Because you're in that chain. And so, you know, I mean, it's not complicated. No, I mean, it's what dependent origination is saying to us all, to wake up, to be able to have that space in our mind through meditation to recognize what's happening in our moment, to stop at the breathe, and to stop that birth.
And you
said something last week, real quickly, you said something last week I wanted to say thank you. You don't have that doubt when you say something, because you have that refined mindfulness and right view. So when you are saying something, there's no reaction after the fact that many of us have with doubt. Gosh, was it too rough? Was it too soft? I just want to also put that in as a segue as well. Thank you.
You mean, am I being too blunt? I try not to be. But I appreciate everything you said, Tim. And you're right. You are While you were talking, I was thinking back to our Vipassana study last year, and you were thinking you were referring back to that, but a lot of that study was coming out in what you just said about how this resides right there at the point of contact. And this just well said. Thank you. Kevin, how are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you, John. I hope everybody had a good retreat last week.
Yeah, we did. All the talks are all up, by the way, too, if anybody wants to. Yeah.
Good.
How are you doing, my friend? How are things out there?
Very well. Everything's going good.
Glad to hear it.
Healthy. I just appreciate everybody's comments. Dependent origination really is fundamental. It is the basics. I remember at the beginning of this, it was very difficult to understand or thinking, how will I ever keep this all straight?
Yeah.
And through repetition, the more you hear it, the more sense it makes and the more fundamental it really is. And then, you know, the path is so obvious, but life just seems to, you know, once you're off your cushion, it just seems to knock you right off the path again.
Yeah.
And it's very set to come back and take a breath and get back on that path over and over. And it's worth it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's worth it. So. Thank you, Kevin. Good to see you this morning.
Thank you.
Well, we lost someone. Hold on. I got to figure out where I am again. We lost some people. David. Mary, how are you?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
Great, wonderful retreat. I haven't had a chance to listen to everybody, but I will go back probably this weekend. So thank you again, John, and to all the teachers.
They did a great job.
It'd be really good. Hopefully nobody's going back and listening to the teaching and critiquing themselves, because you all were authentic.
You hear that, Ram?
Refinement, there's always refinement, but nothing too late. We'll maybe take it forward, okay? Wonderful job, and so generous of your time and preparation. It is not without notice by everyone in the Sangha what a contribution and the time commitment it takes to do that for the rest of us. So thank you so much. One of the things that came from the retreat and I thought was helpful here is being on the lookout for awakening, and that the Dhamma resides in between our words, our stories, or our fabrications. And I really kind of hung on to that, you know, recognizing when you are in equanimity that, you know, the opposite of all this suffering is wisdom and understanding. Because when you, I think somebody said it today, you know, when you're finding something that is unacceptable, like you're causing your own suffering because it's already happened, right? So the closer you can get to wisdom and understanding, you're releasing those things that are creating the suffering. And there is the cessation of the clinging and craving, which are the aggregates, as David mentioned. So, you know, I think recognizing when you are residing in wisdom and understanding, which is also the same of recognizing when you are in a point of, wow, that's unacceptable, or that's not what I expected it to be, or, you know, whatever that is, whichever part of the dependent origination we're on, to recognize that and try to get into wisdom and understanding, you know, like taking a deep breath and saying, in this moment, instead of finding this unacceptable, I'm going to choose wisdom and understanding. And because of the practice, and because of the rigor we bring to the practice, you know, I felt it during today's talk that things fall away, clinging and craving fall away, abandoning occurs, the aggregates come, and that is the Dhamma. So going back to what I said in the beginning, in the retreat, John was summarizing and said, be on the lookout for awakening, you know, equanimity, recognize it. So again, we're never going to get a t-shirt for a sangha, but if we were, equanimity, recognize it. So that's what I took from today. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mary. Well said. Liz, how are you this morning?
Hi, Liz.
Hello, Liz.
You surprised me because in my order of things on my screen, I wouldn't have been next. But
you're right next to Mary.
Oh, nice. Hi, Mary. The Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
I'm doing well, you know, struggling a bit. You know, passion is, you know, one of those things that are, at least for me, it's probably going to be the last thing to leave. But I really appreciated today's teaching. I think it was timely and important for me to hear this. So thank you for that. I don't really have that much to say. I can't wait to listen to the retreat because that's always a nice thing to listen to that adds to the weekly classes and keeps everything consistent in the forefront of our mind. So thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Good to see you this morning.
You too.
Good morning, Deborah. Good to see you. Welcome back to our Sangha.
Yes, this is my second visit.
Yeah.
And I already feel like I know so many of you because of the way you share and you're so vulnerable in your hearts.
Yeah.
And also your practice is inspiring. And I think that's where I'm finding drawn to be here. This might be the first time I've ever heard the word dependent origination, just to share with you where I, you know, I'm coming in on this river, but I understand a lot, but I can relate to the concepts through what I have learned and been exposed to. And I think that it's really about, I'm seeing in learning from you all that it's just practice and support and sharing in hearing and listening and being inspired in others' experiences. Because I know for me, the one thing that I feel I'm really present for is the just being present with everything in life as it unfolds. That seems to be where I'm really utilizing as I finish up a 2-year program and I'm up against everything I'm ready to let go of. And it's fighting me, and it just goes back to just, it's not me, it's not personal, it's all the stories that I've fabricated throughout my entire life that make me this me that's not even me, and to tie so much energy up in that now become incredibly obvious that that is useless. So I think through practice, and actually just really going deeper, I feel a sense of being ready to go deeper into this. Experience. So I'm just going to keep coming.
And
re-listen to today. Today really is, I had many pings throughout today's conversation that I want to not take notes. I want to go back and just sit and listen and let it, and soften myself so that it can go in versus my mental self trying to grasp it and write it. I want to just learn to soften and let things in.
Wow.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you, Deborah. You made everybody really happy. I mean, we were a pretty happy bunch anyway, but you made everybody really happy this morning by just your honesty and becoming part of our Sangha. And from your words, you know, we can all see that you're getting it. Be very, very gentle with yourself. You do have a lot going on right now, and now this. So just let it be what it is. If you do what you just said, you just keep coming, you'll get it. You know, there's nothing, you don't need any special qualities to develop the Dhamma except continued right effort and being part of a Sangha. So welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Jen, good morning.
Hi, everybody. I had a comment and a question. The comment is that today I really got that this sutta is an encyclopedia of the little nuanced ways our mind will crave, cling, suffer. And if you're a new practitioner and you can just understand one little line of the sutta and then have a direct experience of it in yourself, and then maybe abandon it. If you can't abandon it, just remind yourself, this is not me, this is not mine. That's what this sutta does. For a more seasoned practitioner, it's great remediation and reiteration of your practice. So, it's remarkable how this just applies and continues to apply no matter where you are along the path. My question is, I probably should just research this myself, but I wanted to ask you, John, if you were willing to answer. Chronologically, like when this was taught in terms of how much the audience already knew when the Buddha kind of brought this up.
Yeah, it's a great question. There's some of the suttas, because of the setting, many of the suttas that you read, you'll get a background setting, especially if it's from Ananda, who's doing the original recording, who will describe the setting, the people that were there, et cetera, as a way of authenticating. That was done during the first Buddhist council. And so through that, sometimes I can surmise, and it's really a guess, I'm just speculating, that this was a sutta that was probably very early in his teaching career. This was probably towards the end. The Mahaparinibbana Sutta we know was 45 years later, his last sutta. This, I don't know, but my educated guess is it's probably like 3 to 6 months into his teaching career, because he wanted to establish the context for explaining this. So we're doing it a little bit backwards, meaning he taught the Four Noble Truths as his first teaching. We're going to do the Four Noble Truths next Tuesday. But the reason is we understand the context now. So I think it was an early sutta, but you might think it would be the first thing he ever taught, but it wasn't that. I know that. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably, I mean, let's say it was in the first year of his teaching career. I think probably, you know, three to six months.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. That's a teacher for you, huh? How are you, Anthony?
Oh, good morning. Thanks for getting my name right, because I know I say Deborah Murgatroyd, but Deborah Murgatroyd has the only functioning camera in the house.
Uh-huh.
And so I have her proxy today. So there were so many threads you laid out there, John. I'm not sure which one to pull on. Like you said in the beginning, it really covers a lot of ground, and it weaves it together so nicely. I really appreciate it. I don't know if that was you or the Buddha, but talking about the importance of being present and being in the present moment.
That was me.
It really got me thinking, like, you know, we spend so much time going back and forth from the past to the future, and the past is always distorted.
Yeah.
It can't be changed, and it wastes precious time that we need to be spending, you know, with loved ones or focusing on the things that really matter. And
that's right.
You know, the future isn't a lot different. It can't really be predicted. It also wastes time from things that we need to be focusing on. And it's also very often distorted. Usually,
it's
a lot more glamorous than it actually turns out to be. But the ironic thing about it is when you spend all this time worrying about the future and you get to that point in time, it's actually the present. So there's almost no such thing as the future.
That's right. There isn't.
And yet when we get there, this thing that we've been thinking about and dreaming about, we tend to just put on the brakes all the way through it and think about the next future moment, or think about how it was so much better in the past, which probably wasn't. It's amazing that we do that. But it's so important to just to appreciate what's going on. And I was thinking about what Mary said about acceptance. And to me, it's so true that when I can let those guards down and fully accept something that might be agitating me, when I can accept it, actually becomes more acceptable. And sort of an ironic thing, because it's the blind, it's the resistance that makes it worse.
It is. You're absolutely right. I mean, think about it. The biggest problem with being stuck in your house all this time is that you have no future, do you? I mean, really, you can't fantasize about what you're doing next because you can't do nothing next.
Yeah, it does have sort of a Groundhog Day feel to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that really is it. What am I going to do? I can't do anything tomorrow. So.
But yet, I think we'll probably all look back and think these were the best days ever because we got to spend time with loved ones. We didn't have to work. You know, there's a lot of, like, I just think there's a lot of, they made a whole TV show about a family in the Great Depression and how great things were for them during that time. And yeah. I tend to think we're going to go back and glamorize this whole thing, which just shows us we just need to enjoy it now.
Yeah, especially right now. Thank you, Anthony. It's good to see you this morning.
The whole nostalgia industry is to glorify the past.
What was that?
The whole nostalgia industry.
Oh, yeah.
Is glorifying the past.
Yeah. Good to see you this morning, my friend. Hello, Becky.
Oh, I'm surprised too, because according to my screen, I would not have been next. But hello, everybody. Nice to be here. Dependent origination is becoming clearer, which is I'm finding very gratifying, because I remember the first time that I heard this and I had no idea what it was talking about. I really had no idea. Mm-hmm. So hearing it again today, John, it was great. You went slow enough. I enjoyed your teaching of it. I did get a lot of pings. I'm going back and listening again. And I just want to say one thing that's a little bit personal. I said this during the retreat, that I think as you're going through your day, you have to, for me, I have to have a concept or a metaphor that really works for me to sort of knock me back toward right view when I'm having those moments of stress and just like, I wish this wasn't happening, that kind of moment. And for me, that line is, don't take it personally. Yeah. Nothing is personal.
Yeah, that's it.
Just stop and think that when I feel that happening, this is not personal. Don't take it personal. This is not. I can feel right view come a little closer, depending on the situation, of course. Yeah. And one of the metaphors that Lorna came up with, which has helped me so much to sort of do that, is that white sheet that you talked about when you were meditating, and how if you see a white piece of paper and there's nothing on it, and you just draw one line, that's it, you're gone. You're just eye making over this. But you know, I started thinking about that during my meditation, and I just came to the realization that it is possible to look at that white sheet and draw one line and not become attached to it, not take it personal. It's possible to do that. And that is just right view, complete right view.
Yeah.
So thank you, and this was a great sangha.
I agree. Thank you, Becky. Lorna. I know this is one of your favorite suttas.
Well, first of all, I just want to congratulate you on having such a well-concentrated saga as this. I mean, everybody's comments are straight on the arrow, straight to the bullseye. It's remarkable, John, so many congratulations on that.
A lot of right effort here.
I don't want to sound glib, but the steps of dependent origination, I'm understanding more and more. And I think in this teaching this morning, it's highlighted one that I haven't really understood before. And I think that's my problem from dependent origination, that I'm not really understanding. And it's from ignorance. Once I get from ignorance, the steps of dependent origination, I understand. Step to dukkha. I understand that. But the from ignorance is the big problem that I really don't know anything else. I feel like I don't know anything else apart from ignorance. And you just said this morning that ignorance is not knowing self.
Yes.
Well, I think that's my problem, that I don't know self without ignorance. And so that's the hang-up that I have in my understanding. But I know you refer back to the Eightfold Path. There are lots of ways to look at this to point out your own ignorance, which, and all the other teachings support that, Feifling and Angry, if not. It supports you seeing ignorance. But I still don't really understand the first line, the first two words you said is from ignorance. And from, I don't really, I understand what it means, but I don't see it and really understand it, because because I live in it, I guess, and I don't really see, and I know we have, this is not me, this is not mine, to remind ourselves when we are caught up in our own clinging thoughts, our own ignorance, that we go back to, this is not me, this is not mine. And that does help break the pattern of thinking, and you just step outside your own little box of thinking for a minute there, when you do dwell on that and you come back to your breath, and that might break a thought pattern. There are tricks of the trade like that, but I'm beginning to see. Oh, this morning's teaching, though, it's highlighted to me that I don't really understand the first two words of dependent origination from ignorance. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorna. You couldn't understand dependent origination more. You wouldn't be able to ask that question. So, but I'm going to throw it back at you. So where is it? Where is it from ignorance? What is it from? What is ignorance from?
It's a natural occurrence from not knowing the understanding that the Buddha awakened to.
From not knowing Four Noble Truths.
Yeah.
It's just that. And it's nothing else. What you describe so wonderfully is that part of ignorance that compels us to ignore it. It's just right there. We can't imagine a mind that's not concentrated and is lacking the framework of the Eightfold Path can't imagine something other than itself. But if you remember, the answer to the question is that what is the self? It's the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta. So Anytime you think of yourself as something other than those six properties, you're fabricating a self.
Yeah.
But also we have to remember that there was a time when dependent origination brought you to tears, wasn't it? Trying to understand this crazy thing. And now it's a foundational teaching in for your Dhamma practice. So you stayed with it and you reaped the rewards of it. So thank you. Josh, how are you this morning? There you are.
Yeah.
Good morning, Josh.
Good morning. Thank you, John. You're a wonderful teacher, which means imparting knowledge. And I just feel wonderful to be in such a group of people who are... And I recognize it myself, of trying to do the hard work of becoming responsible to become a human being. And,
yeah. It seems a bit absurd, but it is.
And kind of peeling off what Lorna was saying about realizing that I'm basically... exist in a state of ignorance, and trying to understand the dependent origins sequence of things. And for some reason today, every time we would come to the step of consciousness, I would be throwing in self-consciousness. And then it becomes like non-self-consciousness, which is, you know, this whole sense of being trapped in ignorance again. And so I'm getting from today's lesson this whole cycle of being reborn moment to moment in ignorance, because this the whole concept of the dependent origination takes place instantaneously.
Yes.
In the moment. It's not a it's happened so fast you can't I can't grasp it, but I like the way it's broken down, so it kind of gives me a chance to get back to some understanding and acceptance that I really do need to do the work of meditation to kind of start unraveling this little more. But again, I enjoyed what everybody had to say and enjoyed the teaching. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. I'm glad you joined us this morning. Brett, how you doing this morning?
Good to be here. Thanks for your teaching. I got a lot out of it. I definitely, not taking your thought, not taking your thoughts or sensations personally, emotions. Looking back, there's no reason to look back, but realizing that, creating a life that is based on only situations that you want to feel, and opposed to situations you don't want to feel. I think I've done that for a long time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore. And I think that the challenge now is there's no challenges. It's, accepting life as life is. And that's my challenge. So that's where I'm at. It's good to be here. And it was definitely spot on for what I needed to hear, and good to be here. Good to see everybody. Thank you.
That was great, Brett. Enjoy your day accepting life as life occurs.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for asking.
I'm just going to see if I can sum up what I got out of this, okay?
Sure.
This is the rewiring of a mind. What Josh was saying, we are steeped in wrong view. So how do we get out of wrong view? How do we start seeing life from right view? Not so easy a task. However, there is a way out. Refined mindfulness in the present moment is, I believe, an extremely important concept to understand because it gives us perspective and it enables us to understand how we rewire our minds to actually come into right view. Refined mindfulness, again, keeps us in the present moment, okay? It is right mindfulness, and we frame it with the Eightfold Path, okay? When we're in the moment, we are paying attention to life as it unfolds in the moment.
Let me ask you this then, Michael. How does dependent origination support refined mindfulness? How does understanding dependent origination support refined mindfulness?
Because it actually shows us how we are being distracted and in our daily lives, yep. and our view is wrong view when it's being distracted. Okay, when we're distracted in the present moment, distractions occur all the time. Maintaining our concentration in the present moment, okay, enables us to recognize distractions before they become fabrications.
And where does that occur within this process? I don't mean to interrupt you because you're describing something that is very insightful, but I'm going to push you a little bit. Where does that happen within dependent origination? Where is the mind lost? Or mindfulness lost?
Well, it's lost from the, it's, I mean, there's probably two places it's lost, but initially it's lost right from the initial, the first link of ignorance. Okay? I mean, if we're not looking at the world in the right view, if we're starting out our, you know, every thought that comes into our mind, with ignorance, then those 12 causative links are going to just keep on coming. So if we remove that first link, the chain falls and we're free of this.
Yeah. That's the important thing to get from this.
Yes. So now where was I? You see how easily distracted I am out of the present moment. However, going back to what I was saying, being in the present moment, recognizing that distractions are our minds get lost. The mind goes out of the body. Okay, so this is the way we lose the mind. Like my dog is here right now, and he's distracted. Get out of here! Get out! Get out! Get out! Bodhi,
get over and make
it. Bodhi, come. Come. Anyhow, so when we're distracted, our minds are out of our body. They're not united with our body.
And I want you to relate that. I want you to relate that to what we're talking about today, to dependent origination. Where does the distraction arise?
Well, but if you know, I have to develop this. So distractions come from anything that comes into our minds.
What does what you're saying relate to today's sutta? Where does the distraction arise within the sutta?
I think it's right from the first link. We're distracted right from wrong view. Are we not?
Yeah, so that's the point I'm trying to make. So in relation to what this sutta is talking about, that's the point, is going from wrong view to right view. From a lack of refined mindfulness to refined mindfulness.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to get to that. Again, so recognizing the distractions, when we are distracted, our minds and our body is not united. Okay, when the mind and the body are united, we can experience peace and equanimity. The concentration that is needed in the moment is developed in jhana. It's developed in jhana meditation. That's what we do when in jhana we have.
I'm going to ask you the same question again, Michael. How does jhana relate to dependent originate to what we're talking about today?
Okay.
Because those are all important things. Those are all aspects of the Dhamma.
Yes.
How does that relate to what we're talking about today?
Okay. When we develop concentration in jhana, okay, refined mindfulness requires concentration. Okay.
Yes. Where is that concentration applied in dependent origination?
Where does it?
How does it relate to dependent origination?
The concentration is required, as we live presently from moment to moment, moment by moment.
How does that relate to dependent? I'm not trying to make something out of this. How does what you're talking about relate? That's the important thing today. How do we apply concentration to understand dependent origination?
By understanding right view in the moment.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You gave a very good exposition, and it's important that what you were talking about, so everybody understands how it relates to dependent origination. Okay. Which you did. You did a good job at that. Are you finished?
No, actually, I don't know if I am or not. I'm so confused now.
I didn't mean to confuse you. I just wanted to relate what you were saying to what we're talking about today. That's all.
All right. No. As I said, my main point is that, is to be mindfully present. And that being mindfully present as a moment by moment, refined mindfulness, requires concentration that we develop in jhana. Because being mindful every moment requires concentration. We have to be mindful of that. We have to concentrate on being present. Once we are taken out of the present moment, our minds are distracted.
Where is that in dependent origination? Where is that occurring, what you're describing right now?
Moment by moment it occurs.
Where in the independent origination is it occurring?
At the beginning. At the beginning.
Okay.
So this process doesn't unfold. We stop it at the first link. Yes?
Well, yes, we can, but we can stop it at any link, too.
Of course.
At any link in the chain of dependencies, it can be recognized, abandoned, and the whole thing falls apart.
But well, I'm looking at it from, I agree. It could be interrupted at any link, but I'm hoping to be, be present and concentrated enough that I can see, I could recognize when my mind is being distracted and the mind and the body when the mind is lost. So if I'm recognizing that before ignorance occurs, then I can stop it right there and drop that first link.
Very good. You're right about all that. Thank you, Michael. All right. Julia, how are you?
Very good, John. Thank you very much. I wrote something again, so I'll just read it, and you can ask questions or whatever in between, or tell me if I'm on the right track here. So I have, what is dependent origination? Dependent origination is a cycle of conditioning, conditioned by past ignorance, the current state of ignorance, and further becoming. One reaps what one sows. Dependent origination arises from ignorance in order for the wheel of life, death, and rebirth to continue rolling onward. Ignorance is the main cause of suffering. In ignorance, we believe the permanent to be permanent. We do not understand the ego's interaction with this impermanent environment causes stress. We do not understand this ego self looks to establish and perpetuate self by developing strong attachments to things, people, or events of the past or future. Ignorance, craving, and clinging causes actions. Actions come from karma and also form further karma. They stem from mental fabrications and becoming further ignorant. Formations refers to impressions or habits we have formed in our consciousness. They are formed by repeated actions and they become habitual. They are like the formation of a stream upon the earth. They cut a path in our consciousness. So when habits develop, it combines with new actions performed in ignorance, becoming more ignorant. We can assume we are all embedded in ignorance, with our habitual formations playing in the background of our consciousness. So how can we stop this vicious cycle of dependent origination? In jhana, we can recognize a mind in peaceful equanimity and a mind encumbered by distractions. It is in jhana where we can recognize the quality of our mind. We can take the experience into our daily life, and at point of contact, we can recognize the stimuli entering our sixth sense base. We can recognize it as just seeing, just hearing, just smelling, just tasting, just touching, just cognizing. It is as if, as foam on a stream of your consciousness arising and passing away, not personal. So that's what I wrote as my my dependent origination study for
so
today.
So how have you experienced this in your Dhamma practice, your practical experience of utilizing these teachings?
Well, in Dhamma practice, there are times when I feel I feel the peace and equanimity, and then I'm bombarded all of a sudden. Thoughts come in, and you know, I have to wrestle with them, bring them down, you know, and bring them back down again. You know, focus on the breath and be present.
And where does that relate to dependent origination? Where are you in that?
I think it relates to me. It relates throughout the threads of dependent origination. But a point of contact is when you're being like bombarded and banged around. That's when you can take a breath and recognize the distractions coming in through the stimuli of your sense base. And there you can cut it off. Maybe, you know.
That's the only place.
If you can establish a mind in peaceful equanimity at that point.
Yep. Very good. That's the point. So thank you.
Thank you.
Ram, how are you tonight, this morning?
I'm good. That was exactly the point that you were pushing. That it's at contact, it's where we deal with dependent origination. And you know, you can look at dependent origination in lots of ways. The best way for me is always to pick a pair and take that apart and go into that will give you the entry point. But for contact, it's really the Eightfold Path. It's the virtuous factors that show us where this is happening. It shows us where our fabrications are. It shows us where our wrong view is. That's why the Buddha put that into the Eightfold Path, because he wanted us to have a practical way of dealing with our wrong view and our fabrications.
A beautiful exposition. It's like Lorna said, that, you know, this is a very, very, very simple teaching, but because it's so close to what's occurring, it's so close to the problem that we do have difficulty seeing it and grasping what it is. And for almost everyone, it's like you all have described here, developing it. You all were kind of, a little bit like Deborah might be right now. But as you saw the rest of the Dhamma and how that fits in, then you can see this as a key foundational teaching, and it kind of answers the question that Jen had too, when did Buddha teach it? After he had some Dhamma established. But it's such an important teaching. Next Tuesday, we're going to do the Sakavabhanga Sutta, the analysis of the Four Noble Truths. And then next Saturday will be the Magavabhanga Sutta, the analysis of the Eightfold Path. And they'll all fit very nicely together so we see how to end this thing that we talk about, ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Any other questions or comments?
I kind of do. I don't want to take too much time, but to what Mike and Julia were saying, and also Josh, cravings and feelings, in my way I look at it, are initiated by conditioned thinking.
Yep.
Which results in clinging to wrong views. So when we have these conditioned thinking and this wrong view, it's like you said, like the Buddha even said, how do I teach somebody that has wrong view, right view?
Yep.
So that's why I think when Michael was saying, I was even saying that at that point of view, that the wrong view and right view, that first insightful or wisdom, yeah, the right view, the factor, right view is where a lot of this can be stopped, and
a lot of this can be what?
A lot of the at any point in dependent origination, we can, when we recognize wrong view, we can take that breath through the practice of jhana meditation and stop that cycle and go back.
Yep.
And to what Josh was saying, I find it at the point of contact is the best place where that space, as we meditate more and more, is that best place where that space is developed at the point of contact, where we can recognize that reaction, that percolation coming up, where we can stop ourselves take that breath.
Very good. Yeah, that's the practical app. That's why we use jhana meditation and nothing else, because if we're doing something else, mantra or visual base or any chanting, we can't do that simple practical thing of interrupting the ongoing development of ignorance. We have to have something that actually, you know, we have to have the tool of concentration in order to address that. That's what I was talking to Michael about too. How does it apply? This is how it applies, because everything in the Dhamma applies to the to dependent origination in some way. That's why it's such a key teaching. Yeah. Very good, Tim. Anything else? Any other questions or comments? Great teaching. Okay, well, we'll finish with metta as we always do. And I'll leave the room open after this. I'll stop the recording, but I'm going to have to go off camera for a little bit too. All right, find your relaxed meditative posture. Gently close your eyes, gently close your mouth, and take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.